business card. Get away from me. You're behind me. You're not allowed to talk to me.
There were three police officers involved in this?
There were like seven or eight.
Really?
Yeah, they came quick to like cover up something.
So it wasn't just three. It was actually more.
Yeah, and then there was like a plainclothes too.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That seemed kind of.
Someone who's been sitting here before?
Or? Yeah, he was kicking it on the corner here. I seen him like kicking over here in front of this market.
Did anyone ask what the arrest was for? Specifically, did the individual being arrested ask what he was being arrested for?
I'm not sure.
And what did he say that you remember him saying as he was being arrested?
Help me. He said, help me.
Help me. And what was the reaction of the crowd, Trey?
Well, we all, like, jumped in and tried to help, you know.
And how did you guys try to help?
Tried to take authorization. Of the situation.
By asking what was going on?
Demanding information, pretty much. Right. Like, hey, you just assaulted them, and they were like, hey, back up, we want your badge number, we want information now.
What time did this happen? Right now it's about 2:30.
Let's say about maybe 12.
And was he ever hogtied, this guy, or was he just walked across the street? Or
I think he was handcuffed and
not hogtied
across the street.
I heard the word hogtied earlier by...
Yeah.
How many squad cars were involved in this?
Three cars, a motorcycle officer, some community service officers.
Well, obviously, this is a wise use of your taxpayer dollars.
Oh, yeah, sure is.
Did the man have any weapons on him?
I don't think he did.
How big was he? You're about 6'3".
Yeah, he was probably about 150, maybe a little more.
And how tall?
About 5'7".
Was he making kung fu moves and
no.
Breaking windows, perhaps?
No.
Assaulting women?
No.
Grabbing for the police officer's gun?
No.
Uh-huh. I see.
Had front seats.
Was pepper spray brought out at any point threatened?
No. Just, like, took him down and saw instant blood from his face.
Anything you want to add?
No, that's fine.
What was his, we know his name was Juan, but we don't know his full name.
Right, I don't know his full name either.
If we did, we could call the jail and see if he's being held and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, it's already being done.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tree.
Perhaps we can invite this man to speak. Want to come up and talk? This is a guy who's a union man. He just got back to town, and he finds he has no housing.
My name's Dan. I'm a union carpenter. Been in the union for 18 years. Me and my wife just got back in from Florida, and we can't find housing that's affordable.
Yeah.
It's way out of sight. You know, if you come up with the money for the rent, you definitely can't come up with the money for the deposit. I've seen deposits as high as $4,000. You know, it's asinine. I mean, I make decent money, but it doesn't mean anything if you don't have a house over your head, you know?
Right.
And we're moving from state campground to state campground. You can only stay there for 7 days. And after 30 days of each one, you burned out your welcome there. So you're pretty much out in the cold, too. Just me and my wife and my dog, you know? And it doesn't seem like anybody likes animals anymore, even in this town. But, you know, I'm not going to euthanize my dog just so I can get a roof over my head. That's stupid, you know? I can't see that. But, you know, I've been homeless before, but I certainly hadn't planned on being homeless this time, since, you know, I am working. On what they consider middle class America, we are the new poor.
Yeah.
The government don't help us. We pay the taxes for everybody, but we're not poor enough for the government to help us. We're not rich enough for the government to help us. I make too much money to get any kind of housing, you know, but I'm good enough to overtax. That's pretty much it, you know. Last year, I paid over $15,000 in taxes, just the government. I bought some bombs. That's about all I did.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm behind you guys 100%. I mean, everybody needs a roof over their head. Hopefully, mine's going to happen soon, but, you know, who knows? But, you know, something's got to happen because greed seems to be taking, that's the word for the year, I guess, is greed. We used to live in Capitola, and our landlord got sick, so he sold the place, and we had to move from there because the guy that bought it wanted to jack the rents, you know, way high, like $2,500 for a one-bedroom apartment. That's a lot of money for a one-bedroom apartment, you know, and they jack the rents, and they don't do anything to improve the property or the living conditions of the house. I mean, last place we lived in didn't have any insulation, so we paid through the nose for electricity because all the heat's going out, and in the summertime all the heat's staying in. So, you know, I don't know what the answer is, but there has to be one somewhere, and hopefully everybody has to get together on this and stand up and say, hey, we've had enough. You know, I mean, I've been on a lot of union pickets, and we've turned a lot of things around. We got a lot of our work back that was given away. But we had to have the rank and file behind us to stand out there and say, hey, you know, you have to do something. You can't just, you know, build stuff and throw pennies to the workers. Without the workers, you ain't gonna get nothing built. You ain't gonna get nothing done. And if you can't keep a roof over your head and food in your stomach, you're not going to have a worker to do your work. And the rich people ain't going to step down and do it. But I guess they'll have to sooner or later when there ain't nobody to take the spots of the people that do the work. The blue-collar workers. Here. Thank you.
Thank you.
So.
Okay, it's about 15 to 10 on Friday evening. We're talking to Paul Reynolds, and we're in Borders. Paul, you're a man who's just been to court on, well, describe what happened.
Well, the charges were display of merchandise. I had some hemp jewelry and some stones and some crystals laying out, and it was just for the conveniency of being able to make them.
Where was this?
Right here on Pacific Avenue in front of
coffee roasting?
A little bit further down, but yeah, in that area.
How long ago did this, did the police confront
you? Two or three months ago.
The name of the officer was?
Sergeant Baker. Sergeant Baker.
Yep. And at that time, had he warned you? Were you exchanging money for the evil hemp jewelry?
No, I didn't exchange any money. I wasn't even really asking for donations. You know, I was just, if somebody wanted some and they had something to trade, then I trade. And if somebody had money that they wanted to donate, then I'd take a money donation.
What did Baker tell you when you
Basically, he told me that it was illegal and gave me a ticket. And I went to the traffic office. And
you disqualified him?
I disqualified the judge.
Mulligan.
Yes, I did do that.
Good idea.
And then I took it to the section one of the court.
Department one
of the courts. And
there's a new guy there now.
Yeah, kind of old. I don't remember his name.
I don't either. I bet there's he's not one of your.
He's a good judge. And basically, what we did was I had my preliminary hearing.
Your arraignment.
Yeah, my arraignment.
And I asked for a trial.
Yep, for not guilty. And he said it wasn't going to be like a regular trial. He would be just the only judge.
An infraction.
Yeah. So it was kind of an informal trial, but it was good, you know. And both of us stated our stories.
Sergeant Baker showed up.
Sergeant Baker did show up, and both of us stated our stories. He stated his half of the story, which was to the truth. It was to the truth, and then I stated my side of the story, and the judge gave me four different options. An option to do 20 hours community service, which would be 20 hours community service plus $35 costing me for that.
How nice of him.
Yeah, which would equal, and then he said that I could pay an $81 fine.
How nice.
Or I could take the community service up with Sergeant Baker, and he would be who I reported to. Or the fourth option was for him to drop the infraction payment or whatnot and only charge me $30. So I took the $30 charge. He gave me the option to only pay $30, and he dropped the
So you pay him $30, and he lets you go. But if you try to sell that shit around here again, boy, you're out of here, man.
It's pretty much is what it is. But still, the guy gave me a break. The judge was understanding. I think it's more the cops who aren't understanding, who are trying. Because you get in there, and it's a waste of their time. You know, they don't want to go to court for something like that.
Well, display of merchandise is frequently done. Actually, it was a display of artifacts, because I don't think there was any. But did the Baker present any evidence that you were trying to sell it?
No, but there was a document saying that people that are part of the downtown association had seen me selling it before.
A document is fine, but unless there's a witness, it's hearsay, so it shouldn't have been admitted. Was there another witness against you?
No.
And it was bullshit. So you had you known that rules of evidence, you could have said, Your Honor, this is not admissible evidence. If somebody wants to testify that they see me selling it, let them come down and do so. Of course, they don't tell you this when you come walking
in. Well, I'm not a lawyer either, so.
Right.
And I went by myself. So,
and did Baker make arguments there, or did he just present testimony?
No, he just presented testimony.
Right. Well,
I think it went rather well, actually, you know, for like...
Well, excellent.
Yeah. I mean, as well as it could go, I'm still giving him $30. That's three hours of work out of my pocket.
Have you stopped showing your jewelry?
Yeah, I have, and I'm very disappointed about that, because I would like to share it with everybody. I think that they should be... Because my reasoning behind it is, if you're going to sit down here and make jewelry, say you do it in front of a bookstore. Uh-huh. Bookstores don't sell jewelry. You're not taking their business. Mm-hmm. Okay, and say that you make money out there, where are you going to spend it? In the direct vicinity, right where you are, you know? So you're going to go to the Pizza My Heart, which is right down the street, which is a mall, you know, store, which helps them. And then you're going to go uptown to get cigarettes or wherever, and, you know, you spend your day on the mall doing that, then you're spending money here. So it's like you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours kind of thing.
Well, I suppose the argument is that there'll be some sort of commercial trinket hacks up and down the avenue instead of these tourist trap upscale hacks that occupy the buildings. But, you know, I think... That could be dealt with by specifying, you know, the display of handmade merchandise under, let's say, a certain amount of money was not considered criminal behavior. And of course, there are towns that allow this. Like, I guess Eugene has a process.
Tempe, Arizona has a process where you can get a permit to do so.
I think Berkeley also has a way of doing this, although I'm not quite sure what the process is. Either up and down Telegraph Avenue, various merchants who are pretty, you know, informal and downscale. But unfortunately, I know that I talked to a merchant 11 years ago, an artist, he wasn't a merchant, who designed artwork. I mean, it was little sculptures. His name was Jay Green, I think it was sculptures. And he He went to Marty Wormhout, the mayor, and Marty Wormhout just, oh, she smiled and she nodded. Just like Tim Fitzmaurice these days, you could always go to the mayor and ask him to do something about this. But I would encourage you to get together with other people who are...
merchants.
Not just merchants, people who display their artwork, people who are reading their poetry, people who are on the street, and form a union, form a what's called a busker. There actually is a, Phil Free works in a busker's union. He's a musician on the avenue here. He might be a person to go to.
I have to run, though.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Robert, right?
Don't let this happen again. I'm afraid I may have to turn you in.
No,
I mean, the eyes of the Downtown Association are upon you.
They're always watching.
All right.
Robert, right, though?
Yes.
All right, take care, bro.
Bye-bye.
Says up the street near the Palomar, actually near the former Cooper House, are various portraits sort of strewn all over the, leaning all over one of the storefronts, and a sign about portraits for donation. Just an impression of desperation tonight, maybe reflecting my own inner mood, but kind of middle-class desperation. Here's a woman playing now the guitar with these two children sitting in seats right next to the guitar case, and she stands behind the case next to the two children. And there's a variety of, looks like, bills in the guitar case. People are stopping, kind of staring. And here, let's move closer. Listen to the guitar.
This is a tape recorder, not a camera.
Can I buy it?
What?
Can I buy it?
Well, you are by talking into it. See, your voice goes on this machine. How old is your brother? Yeah, your voice.
My voice?
Yeah.
Oh, where's the cord?
It takes your voice and plays it back.
Is it back?
When your mom's finished playing, I'll show you.
Hey, just go get the bat.
What's your brother's name?
Jackson.
And your name is?
Ruby.
Whoa.
Ruby.
I'm Robert.
Robert.
Roger. So, I'm gonna listen to your mom play.
Good evening, I'm Harris Fletcher, and welcome to tonight's Channel 6 Evening News. A shooting incident at last Sunday's Corporate Topless 500 has intensified calls for a ban on automatic weapons. Our reporter Monica Mascara has more.
A shooting spree by one of the drivers in Sunday's Corporatopolis 500 had lawmakers at the state capitol today renewing calls for a bill banning automatic weapons. 7 people died and 33 were injured when a deranged driver pulled out a machine gun and began to fire into the stands at San Francisco's Corporatopolis Multinational Raceway. Representative Peter Practical, chair of the State Assembly's Public Policies Committee, said today that the time for talk is over, that lawmakers from both parties must come together in a bipartisan effort to get these terrible weapons out of the hands of corporate criminals.
We need to take action now. The public is not going to be safe until we get these weapons out of the corporate boardrooms.
The gunman in Sunday's shooting incident was identified as Douglas C. Slime, the driver of the Committee on Jobs car. Witnesses say Slime became angry after being penalized by race officials for passing another car during a yellow flag. Then, say racegoers, pandemonium broke out.
Well, I was drinking a beer, and the first I know that there was any shooting going on was when one of the bullets passed right through my beer can, and my buddy turned to me and said, "Hit the deck," and we did, and there was people yelling and screaming all over the place.
Police characterized Slime as a loner, a person who lived on the periphery of society, associating only with other corporate criminals. We spoke with Dr. Sigmund Goodfield, a San Francisco psychiatrist who specializes in counseling for victims of corporate crime. Dr. Goodfield said Slime's actions fit the classic pattern of wanton destruction without regard for human life that is evidenced by many corporate criminals.
The corporate underworld is a dark, seedy, and dangerous place. We have evidence of corporate CEOs engaging in devil-worshipping, satanic rituals, black masses, and of course, automatic weapons proliferate freely. In such a subculture, life, I'm afraid, is cheap.
Beatrice Hogbottom says she will have to live with the loss left by that shooting spree for the rest of her life. Beatrice's husband, Sluggo, is one of those who lost his life in Sunday's hail of gunfire.
He was such a good father to our children. I just don't know what I'm gonna do now. Something's gotta be done about all these automatic weapons.
Beatrice says she plans to spend the rest of her life campaigning for the repeal of automatic weapons. She may yet get her wish, for today at the state legislature, the Hogbottom Bill was introduced by State Senator Jerry Appleby.
We as a society have to do whatever it takes to make sure corporate criminals pay for their crimes, even if it means adopting some stringent measures.
The bill would prohibit sales of automatic weapons to anyone with a corporate criminal record. And while supporters say they fully expect tough opposition from the corporate gun lobby, they are ready for a long uphill battle. I'm Monica Mascara, reporting from the state capitol.
The president today called on Congress to enact swift passage of the Hogbottom Bill. National Corporate Radio's Ted Mothball has more.
The president told congressional leaders today that no matter what it takes, Americans must be protected from corporate criminals. And as part of his crime protection package, he called for a swift passage of the Hogbottom Bill, named for the San Francisco race fan who was killed last year when a driver went on a shooting rampage, spraying bullets into the crowd.
Sluggo Hogbottom was a family man. His memory calls out for passage of this bill. We must take steps immediately to deter corporate criminals by banning the sale of automatic weapons.
The Hogbottom Bill would do away with such weapon sales to anyone with a corporate criminal record. However, Priscilla Slade of the National Automatic Rifle Association says the bill just goes too far.
And all satire aside, we have on the line with us now, and you were listening to the Jolly Roger comedy troupe from about half a decade ago. That's one of Carol Denny's groups. She was in that group. But we have a Carol Denny fan on the line here, Eleanor. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi, Robert. This is the first time I've tuned in a while. I haven't had any energy. I'm so delighted that you've got Carol Denny music on again. I just love her. So wonderful to hear it again. And good to hear your program and that you're continuing to keep on keeping on. I read something yesterday in the Mercury. Cisco Systems, one of the giant corporate software corporations, mm-hmm. Is offering their workers that they have to lay off 1/3 of their pay and all their benefits if they work for a nonprofit for a year. They'll pay for it, and then they can come back to their company. And I instantly thought of us here in Santa Cruz, and I thought it would be really nice if you could lure some of that talent here and get one of the nonprofits to inquire and get somebody over here. Maybe you could get something done with some of that brain work.
That would be great.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool, and because we certainly need help here. And also, I feel encouraged that, and I'm sorry that the software at Silicon Valley has collapsed for all the people that are really losing out. A lot of people are being displaced, and there's a lot of pain and suffering going on, but I'm hopeful that we'll get our land back now, and that possibly the tide will turn for people here in Santa Cruz in terms of housing.
Well, you're the first person who suggested that might actually happen. I'm skeptical, but hey.
Well, it's already in the paper yesterday. The Mercury, they're already showing the graphs, the lowering of rents, and the vacancy rates are up everywhere. So I think it'll take some time to get to us, but I think it will happen, and I'm really kind of happy about it for us, because it changes things now. Now it's just Santa Cruz, and it's not this booming, come here with your dollars, and everybody else, we just roll over them. I'm really hopeful that there'll be change for that. I'm sorry there hasn't been any growth in the areas of providing for people who are homeless some sort of shelter. I mean, the council has talked about it for as long as I can remember, and nothing has really materialized in terms of provisions for people that are without housing. And particularly, I have a soft spot for people who are mentally ill and people who are physically disabled. So mental and physical disabilities, particularly mental, because it's such a struggle if you get thrown off your horse and you have clear thinking and you can't put things together and there's no damage to your mind. But when you don't have that, it's really, I'm at a loss for words for how sad it is for people that can't work the system, because they can't put things together.
Well, you've been engaged in a kind of a confrontation with at least a part of the system, Mercy Housing, where you've been having some, problems that have led even to a lawsuit.
Oh, yes, yeah, and it's not over. My lawsuit is continuing on. It's moving through the courts nicely. I've gotten a continuance at my request for...
Summarize what the issue is for us.
Discrimination. They discriminate against the disabled, and for me personally, and of course anybody in my position, but my lawsuit is on behalf of myself. They've discriminated against me in their policies, their practices, their rules, the construction, you name it. They haven't left out anything. It's a pretty frustrating, humiliating, painful life here. But I am going through the system, and I asked for an extension at my last case management hearing, so that because I filed complaints with HUD, and they're investigating, and I would like to wait to see what they can accomplish before I go further with my lawsuit.
Well, I know Mercy Housing has recently been called on the carpet around the El Centro move to Galt Street deal, which I don't have a lot of details on, but I've heard from several sources was a deal by Mercy Charities where they brought in the funding sources and essentially got the city council to at least preliminarily agree to, you know, move the El Centro folks into this Galt Street development, which hasn't been built yet. But
is that the one that is a senior complex?
Yes.
Yeah, they're asking more. They gave me a letter. I can't get over that they did that. They're asking for people to sign this letter they wrote, people here in Sycamore Commons, to the HUD Select Committee, so that they can get the funds to do that.
Now, the Sycamore Commons is run by Mercy Charity.
They own it.
And they own it as well. This, of course, has been our concern of some of us around the $16.5 million Dolphin Lee boondoggle that is rolling down the road at us, where Mercy Charities not only plans it, builds it, pushes it through the city council, runs it, but they end up owning it.
Yes. Well, you know, I have to say something about Mercy Housing Corporation is what they really are, by the way. Once you sue people, you learn out what they really are. They are Mercy Housing Corporation. They're big business in America. They have, I don't know, I don't want to quote the figures because off the top of my head I don't know, but they're very big business. They're very persuasive. They have a very good, slick style, and they're very persuasive, and nobody else is in here doing it. And so they the pressure is on our officials to get this type of housing, and they're the ones that are in here doing it, and so they get it done, you know. And
what about Mid-Peninsula? You know, what about...
I don't know anything about them.
Yeah, I don't know much about them either. The Bridge, Habitat for Humanity, which, of course, is a somewhat different operation.
Well, Habitat for Humanity, they've built some homes in Capitola.
Right, but I'm just wondering why there's this monopoly status that the Mercy Housing Corporation has here.
I think because they're here. Because they're here and they're doing it. And I really, I mean, this is just, I really don't know for a fact. That's just what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You know, it could be.
So
what else can I tell you? Go ahead.
I pretty much said my piece, and I'm always glad to hear you, Eleanor. I'm looking around for this other Carol Denny tape, which I have the empty box to, but I'm having trouble finding the actual tape to, called The Rich Will Never Be Poor, which is a new Carol Denny album that I know you'd love to hear.
Oh, great.
But unfortunately, it may not be happening. You may have to tune in next Thursday between 6 and 8 to hear it.
Okay.
Hey.
Okay, if it doesn't happen, I'm going to have to do that.
You'd better.
So good to hear you and Becky Johnson and everyone else who's out there still trying for the little guy.
Hey, thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that better be the rest of you, too, because we can't do it by our lonesomes, that's for sure. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You're in the last 15 minutes of the May 6th edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Boy, I don't know what to read. I was going to read a long letter from JB Associates, which apparently is going to be spearheading a campaign against rent control, but we don't have a lot of time to talk about it. Now, I'm going to do a little bit of reading from this, but then I'm going to turn finally to Fitzmaurice's Sleeping Band record, which I will be bringing to the Green Party's Homeless Working Group today as a suggestion that they pass on to Tim Fitzmaurice for his comments, or that they modify it and then pass it on. Pass on without passing out, please. Thank you very much. Seems to be a lot of unconsciousness going around these days, and I wouldn't like to see the Green Party Homeless Working Group picking up on that. Here's this letter, April 6, 2001, from JB Associates, 252 Swanton Boulevard. Dear Santa Cruz property owner, over the past few years, rent control has been a recurring topic in the city of Santa Cruz. In 2001, activist Bob LaMonica, in a one-person campaign, barely failed to gather enough signatures to put a rent control initiative on the ballot, but thousands did sign his petitions. His failure did not silence the call for rent control. As housing prices soar, energy prices rise, and all socioeconomic levels from teachers, police, and nurses to low-income citizens feel the pressure of making rent every month, the present city council has come to support rent control. I don't believe that, but I think the writers of this do. The pressure mounting in the community may help the rent control activists organize a better campaign to lobby council members to implement rent control. There are at least four of the seven current city council members who have spoken in favor of rent control in Santa Cruz, but not very loudly, I might add, or persistently, nor did they support Bob LaMonica's initiative. Recently, the Santa Cruz Sentinel ran three stories about the problem of high housing prices. The story about rent increases at the Cypress Point Apartments has the residents calling for rent control. The most recent article, Call for Rent Control Grows, specifically announced a call to organize for a rent control ballot measure. On April 8th, the Santa Cruz Action Network SCAN held a rent rage rally for Beach Flats residents and specifically to voice their opposition to the landlord at 204 Riverside. The residents at 204 Riverside have faced huge rent increases while their units remain in code violation. There is no doubt rent control will be put forth as a possible solution. JB Associates would like to work with local property owners to monitor the situation locally and coordinate a long-term strategy, and here's the kicker, folks, to ensure that rent control is not passed in the city of Santa Cruz. We will provide educational materials to legislators and key decision makers, media outreach, coalition building with other no rent control advocates, a website if sufficient funds are available. We will distribute alerts and updates to participating property owners and present information to show the positive aspects of landlords. Our goal in the short term is to calm the fears of those who think rent control is the only answer to the city's housing problem, and if need be, in the long term, coordinate a local campaign to oppose a rent control ordinance. To organize and fund a project like this is difficult, but we do have successful experience at it. It appears we can make it work if we get $1 per unit per month from landlords in Santa Cruz. It's hard to say until we hear from you, but we're planning on a monthly minimum of $5 per landlord. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to contact me at the numbers listed below. If you would like to participate, please fill out the enclosed form. Sincerely, Jennifer Brogger, JB Associates. And then there's a form which suggests email, phone number, number of rental units you have. There's the Rent Rage Rally flyer for the first Rent Rage Rally that happened in Beach Flats on April 8th. And then there is an interesting two-page article by Gordon Pusser, a Santa Cruz political activist and real estate investor who recently developed a mixed-use project in the West Santa Cruz Industrial Zone, The Owner's Perspective. My 20 years' experience with rent control, I'm reading a little bit of this for you now, as an owner of a three-unit facility taught me a lot of things in Berkeley. These lessons have caused me to want to make sure that I don't live in a rent-controlled community, even though I don't own or plan to own any property that might be subject to our Santa Cruz rent control ordinance. And rather than read the details of this, which I'd hoped to be able to discuss with actually a Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz advocate, Donna Dice, but she was unable to get to us by phone or in person because of an injury. I'm going to read you the main headings, the main arguments that Gordon Pusser puts out against rent control. And these arguments, and hopefully we can go into this in more detail at a future show, possibly next Thursday from 6 to 8 or next Sunday from 11 to 1:30 when we'll come back for the longer show. Here are his arguments against rent control in Berkeley. It didn't help students at all. It didn't help poor people. It polarizes the community. Landlords are harassed even beyond the law, Evictions are very difficult. Economic returns dwindle. Cash flow may even become negative. Value goes steadily down. And what his solution is, right now we need to educate people about rent control. The phrase means different things to different people, but we're hearing it more and more. A one-way dialogue is already underway, but so far it hasn't gotten beyond blaming rental property owners for all the consequences of an area-wide housing shortage. As a developer and rental property owner in Santa Cruz, I don't enjoy being stigmatized this way, and I doubt if you like it either. I know the kind of work JB Associates does, and I urge you to join me and other concerned income property owners in jointly funding JB Associates' proposal. It could be the best insurance you ever bought. And this is a proposal, I mind you, to get a war chest to oppose rent control on the, in my mind, specious theory, but the theory anyway, that there are 4 votes for rent control at Santa Cruz City Council. I wish there were. That would be very nice. There aren't even 4 voices for rent control. There isn't even 1 voice for rent control that is clearly there at Santa Cruz City Council that I've heard in any consistent way. That's too bad. But as you can see, the forces against rent control are mobilizing even now. If you want to call in, our lines are open, 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. We are a 24-hour free station, micro-powered. We broadcast without a license and without apology. If you want to reach us off-air, we are at 427-4523. And you can leave a message of, I guess, up to 2 or 3 minutes length. You can leave a public service announcement that we will play on the air if it seems appropriate, and usually it is. If you want to give us a donation, you can find out how to do that. You can also find out how to contact us on the web at www.microradio.net/FRSC. Again, if you call 427-4523, our voicemail, you'll get all that information again for you in a hopefully manageable bites at a manageable speed. I'm your host, Bathrop's Pierre Robert Norse, doing a Civil Rights on the Streets show, which I do twice a week. Call-in number here, again, if you want to reach me live on air, and you can if you wish, is 427-4523, 427-4523. If you want to come talk directly to some Huff activists, and I'm one of them, Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, Peace and Freedom Party and Huff and others are jointly endorsing and sponsoring an evening about the sleeping ban and its links with other issues such as police brutality, rent control, and UCSC policies around that destroy housing, affordable housing, or I should say subsidized housing projects that are essentially eating up all affordable housing funds but don't really provide more affordable housing than they destroy, all kinds of sort of links that we really haven't looked at very closely around the issue of this crazy Santa Cruz law, the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, which makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep outside or in a vehicle or in any structure that is not a house or hotel between the hours of 11 and 8:30, and provides for a $54 fine for doing so. So, in the last few minutes of the show, I'm going to read a little bit of a flyer that I'm going to present at the Green Party Homeless Working Group meeting today at 132 Matson Street, for those who are interested out in Live Oak. If you really think you want to go to this thing, I would suggest showing up at the town clock at 2, although the meeting won't actually happen until 4. I can, again, give you directions, and if there are enough people who want to go, I'll perhaps do a caravan. I'll try to clean out my car. Boy, that would be a big job, but we'll see. This is Fitzmaurice's Sleeping Ban record by Becky Johnson and myself. It was originally written back in February, and it was updated, well, 3 times since, and I'll begin to read it here. In the early 90s, the Green Party of the state of California made ending anti-homeless sleeping bans explicitly a part of its platform, according to longtime Green Party activist David Silva. The local Green Party lobbying efforts added ending the criminalization of homelessness to the platform. In 1997, activists filed the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban, which the Green Party of Santa Cruz voted to endorse. And, of course, Municipal Code 6.36 is the camping ordinance, which in effect bans camping citywide except in backyards and fenced-in side yards. It prohibits setting up tents and camping equipment and maintaining a campsite. Municipal Code 6.36.010A is the sleeping ban section, which actually bars the act of sleeping after 11 p.m. And this is the verbatim wording of that section. But unfortunately, we'll have to wait because we have the public calling in.
Front Free Radio.
Well, on with the show. Sleeping, 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. To sleep at any time between the hours of 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. in any of the following places is specifically prohibited. Outdoors, with or without bedding, tent, hammock, or other similar protection or equipment. 2. In, on, or under any structure not intended for human occupancy, whether with or without bedding, tent, hammock, or other similar protection or equipment. And this, of course, includes any building that is not a domicile. That is what we discovered in court in 1988. And 3, in, on, or under any parked vehicle, including an automobile, bus, truck, camper, trailer, or recreational vehicle. That is, it is illegal to sleep in your own recreational vehicle on any public street or in any driveway in Santa Cruz, except under the 72 hours and get out of town exception that Fitzmaurice passed back in 1999. That's the sleeping ban, which the Green Party in Santa Cruz voted to endorse an initiative to repeal that sleeping ban. It would have legalized, the initiative would have legalized sleeping outside or in vehicles in nearly 40% of the city. It would have allowed the city council to ban sleeping at night in residential and oceanfront areas. It did not legalize sleeping in parks at night or legalize lying down in the downtown area. And that failed to get on the ballot. In 1998, through the Santa Cruz County Greens lobbying efforts, the Green Party of the state of California specifically voted to call for the end of criminalization of homelessness in general and the end of sleeping bans in particular, now a plank of the Green Party of California. And there's a website for the Green Party, which is Santa Cruz Green Party, all one word, .org. In 1998, the Greens and other progressives endorsed Fitzmaurice for city council. Fitzmaurice said that during that campaign that he opposed ticketing people for sleeping. Successful city council candidates Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar committed themselves to meaningful action to decriminalize sleeping, which they shortly thereafter attempted, I should say Crone and Sugar did, over Fitzmaurice's opposition. In December of 1998, Fitzmaurice abandoned Crone and Sugar and voted down their motion to not ticket sleepers unless an identifiable health or safety hazard existed. In February 1999, the council voted Fitzmaurice's proposal to allow one vehicle with homeless occupants to sleep in the driveway of a private residence with the written permission of both the property owner and the tenant for only 3 days in any calendar month. Fitzmaurice got the idea from a car can be parked on a city street for up to 72 hours. The law he proposed without input or discussion from homeless people advocates or Green Party input. One activist called it the 72 hours and get out of town law. This change incidentally legalizes middle class people inviting grandma and her Winnebago in the driveway for a short visit, but really doesn't help homeless people at all. Few renters dare ask their landlord for written permission to allow someone to sleep in a car on their property, even if no one else would object. 3 days is a cruel joke when the average homeless person spends 4 months on the street before finding housing. According to the Homeless Census 2000, a needs assessment survey conducted in Santa Cruz County last year by United Way, there is much, that's where that figure comes from. There's much interesting and surprising information in this study, which is available at the Community Action Board, 457-1741. The Green Party platform says that those who aid homeless people should not be legally prohibited from acts of charity and providing shelter, food, or other assistance. Abolish anti-sleeping laws, especially in areas which don't have adequate open space, shelter, and sleeping areas for the homeless, is paragraph 6 under homelessness, page 43 of the Green Party of the State of California platform. Period. In January 2000, activists circulated a second voter initiative to decriminalize sleeping, which then Vice Mayor Fitzmaurice declined to sign. In fall of 1999 and later in the spring of 2000, City Council first ignored, then dumped, the Homeless Issues Task Force recommendations one by one. One recommendation was to repeal the entire camping ban, not just the sleeping ban sections of that law, as fatally flawed. Another emergency Homeless Issues Task Force recommendation was to suspend giving sleeping and camping tickets until safe zones could be established. Fitzmaurice let these recommendations die and proposed no meaningful alternatives. In May 2000, Fitzmaurice voted to open safe zones in the industrial areas for nighttime homeless sleeping. At 1 a.m. in late June, on an item improperly agendized, he did not object to a questionable vote that killed the zones before they had even been opened because of a propaganda campaign from police and conservative businesses. Fitzmaurice never initiated or supported an investigation into those charges. In June 2000, Fitzmaurice made no objection when Green Party activist David Silva was dragged away in handcuffs by police in a false arrest to Dominican psychiatric ward for allegedly being a danger to himself. This was on June 13, 2000. Silva had suggested some days before that public immolation might be needed before City Council would keep its commitments around the sleeping ban, such as, let's say, Buddhist monks did in Vietnam when they burned themselves alive in protest against the killing that was going on there. He apologized, that is, David Silva apologized shortly after the suggestions were made. He was arrested anyway without evidence, warrant, or justification in the midst of a key City Council meeting because of his sleeping ban activism. And by arrested, we mean taken into psychiatric custody on a 5150 hold. In July, Fitzmaurice proposed a ballot initiative which would have legalized sleeping out of doors on the ground, but criminalized occupancy of a vehicle on public property between 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. This actually was worse language than currently exists in the sleeping ban, at least during that period of time. When activists quickly convened to propose alternate language that they could support, Fitzmaurice supplied the key vote to table the proposal without debate, ensuring that nothing got on the ballot in November. That was the last the council even discussed the sleeping ban. That was last summer. Fitzmaurice would not raise the issue of sleeping ban repeal in the fall elections, even though it was a Green Party requirement for endorsement. Though organizations and the public brought it up at virtually every election forum, Fitzmaurice remained completely silent. All he needed was one more council vote to pass the Safe Sleeping Zones killed in July. He got that vote, in fact, something he got two votes, maybe even three, but then, and so far, has refused to use it. In December 2000, 2 to 3 people waited peacefully and legally in his public waiting room to persuade him to agendize the sleeping ban or some meaningful alternative. Fitzmaurice threatened peaceful activists, ordered them to leave, and then prompted his aide to get a restraining order banning the three leaders. That's the City Council coffee klatch affair. On December 21st, the Homeless Services Center Memorial read the names of 41 homeless people who died in 2000 in Santa Cruz County. By May 1st, at least another six had died. In January 2001 at Council, Fitzmaurice initiated decorum rules that penalized pro-homeless media, such as not allowing handheld tape recorders to be operated at the podium and barring face-on videoing of speakers from behind the dais. He began interrupting homeless rights speakers, refusing them the time to speak, and even removing them. In February 2001, Fitzmaurice blocked Councilmember Porter's proposed discussion of the sleeping ban. Fitzmaurice also ignored repeated requests that council direct staff to find safe sleeping sites and shelter buildings as requested in the April 2000 Sugar Memo and the unanimous July 2000 City Council resolution. In February 2001, Fitzmaurice denied a legitimate claim against the city by Green Party activist David Silva concerning his false arrest and imprisonment on orders of a City Council member last June, see above. When Councilmember Crone slanderously suggested Silva's arrest was justified, Fitzmaurice took no move to correct the record or defend Silva. No mediation was attempted. In February and March 2001, Fitzmaurice took no initiative to involve himself in Green Party homeless working group discussions about his bad sleeping ban record. I just added the word bad. I wrote here his sleeping ban record. Nor has he appeared at the last three Green Party assemblies, even though the issue is both an important party and community issue. In April, Fitzmaurice spent public money to send the city attorney's office into court to stop a court appearance where he would personally be questioned about the December expulsion of activists from his office. Judge Stevens ruled Fitzmaurice had to appear in a hearing scheduled now for 9 a.m. May 29th. Metro Santa Cruz, April 11th, quotes Fitzmaurice as saying, quote, "There is no intention of putting the sleeping ordinance on the agenda until somebody has a program that makes sense and that the community will support," unquote. He sent no message supporting the Berkeley City Council's April 24th policy change requiring one complaint and two warnings before lowest priority enforcement of its sleeping ban. And that, of course, was something we talked about in the last few council sessions. I should say the last few Bathrop's Beer's broadside sessions, more fun than council sessions, how Berkeley City Council has changed its police policy regarding at least enforcement of 647J, which is the state law used to harass homeless people sleeping outside. It is true, Berkeley has yet to change its policy around the UC police jurisdiction at University of California at Berkeley, as well as to annul other codes or tell the police not to enforce other codes such as trespass on public property, which are used to harass sleepers as well. Although it's really been kind of strange to me how you can have someone trespassing on public property, and that it's a strange way of looking at who owns the land, as it were. But apropos of that whole thing, How about a little music while we're waiting and thinking about this? A song actually that you may not have heard before, one which will be kind of a surprise for us. Assuming I can get this thing to work. There we go. And of course you can call in at
427-3777. We got the war on drugs. We're the enemy. What it means? Incarcerate all the young black men. What it means? Incarcerate all the Mexicans. What it means? Incarcerate all the poor whites. What it means? Incarcerate all the homeless. At what point does it become okay? To stand up and say out loud, it's racist, it's genocide, it's slavery, it's a police state. America cannot afford another Vietnam War, another prolonged foreign war. We'll take the system down from the inside. America cannot afford another prolonged foreign war. Thank God we got George Bush to find us an enemy within our own borders. The enemy is you. The enemy is me. We got the war on drugs. We're the enemy. What it means? Incarcerate all the young black men. What it means? Incarcerate all the Mexicans. What it means? Incarcerate all the poor whites. What it means? Incarcerate all the homeless. It's all been done before, in the last world war. The solution to unemployment, internment, internment, internment. My enemy, he is a fucking pig. My enemy, he lives up in the capital. My enemy, his name is Gray David. My enemy, his name is William Bennett. My enemy. He was gone and all bad. My enemy. He got the Mexican border. My enemy. Building a prison just for me. My enemy. He throws out law and order. My enemy. It's not a heroin junkie. My enemy. It's not a speed freak. My enemy. Not a skid row alcoholic. My enemy. Does not sleep on the street.
Well, give me Carol Denny any time, I've got to say, and that's who we're going to be hearing shortly. We're reaching the end of the show, it looks like the next show folks haven't showed up, so we're going to throw on a loop tape shortly. I want to remind you to come on down on Tuesday evening to Loudon Nelson Center at 7:30, where we can actually check out some of the real history, maybe make a little real history around campgrounds, tent cities, connections between the sleeping band and other issues, and we can even eat pizza together. That's 7:30 Tuesday night. And if you want more information at Loudon Nelson Center, that's at Laurel Park at Center and Laurel, actually. Give a call to 423-4833 off-air for more information on that subject. And I got a couple of stories I was going to read. Boy, did a lot of printing up, but haven't gotten to them. Linwood makes car camping illegal. Until this month, Linwood police didn't have the authority to ask someone living in their car to move along. They could continue to live in their vehicle on the street because they weren't violating the law. Police officers weren't able to use parking or trespass laws to control the situation, city officials said. Now that's changed. A rise in resident complaints about people living in their cars prompted the Linwood City Council to suddenly get affordable housing? No. To make it unlawful for anyone to camp on city streets, in the local parks, or in wooded areas. In other words, get out. Officials in other cities say Linwood is taking a direct approach to the problem. That problem, folks, is you, low-income people. You are the problem. Other Snohomish County cities, such as Mount Lake Terrace and Mill Creek, this sounds like it's not California, I'm not quite sure where it is here, use parking, trespass, and park laws to control people living in their vehicles. Linwood police had no arrest capabilities to deal with what Police Chief Steve Jensen called the city's chronic campers. Boy, these chronic people who keep having to sleep every night. I mean, it's a problem. Why don't they get some kind of therapy for it? Their presence on the streets made people in houses understandably nervous, Jensen said. Although Linwood has a 72-hour vehicle parking law, this didn't apply to a situation where someone was living in their car, Jensen said. Had we tried to utilize that car, they could have moved infinitum. The 72-hour law is designed for people who store their vehicles on the street. So it's okay to store your vehicle, just don't try to sleep in it. Nor does the 72-hour law apply to people living in a city park or an undeveloped wood area. That's a very direct approach Linwood's taking, said Sergeant Craig McCall, a detective with the Mount Lake Terrace Police. Police in Mount Lake Terrace use three different laws to keep people from living in their vehicles and disturbing residents. Police use the 72-hour vehicle parking law to get them to move their vehicles off city streets. For someone camping overnight in the city parks, they enforce a law that prohibits being in a park overnight. Well, meet the Santa Cruz solution. City parks are closed from dusk until dawn, McCall said, and someone living illegally on private property can be charged with trespassing. We had people camped out near I-5 and 220 Street Southwest. We worked it out with the property owners and used the trespass laws to clear them out of there. Linwood's new no camping law doesn't apply to someone who's temporarily taking a nap in their car, middle-class person in other words, or someone who's using it as their temporary digs after a fight with their significant other, said Trudy Dana, Linwood police spokeswoman. The new law was prompted in part by Linwood residents who complained to police about an area near 200th Street Southwest and Highway 99 where the city had purchased a large tract of undeveloped land. Residents in the area complained about people living in their cars on the vacant lot and the sight of people dressing, undressing, using the bathroom, and exhibiting lewd conduct. Under the new no camping law, a misdemeanor, a conviction could result in fines of up to $1,000 or up to 90 days in jail or both. City officials said the new law, however, likely won't result in people being thrown in jail for being homeless and having to live in their cars, and I add, because naturally that would give them a home in the jail for a little while. You don't want to bother with that. Just harass them until they get going. Linwood police officers will continue to hand out a list of community agencies that the people can contact for housing and other services, or they might say to be denied housing and other services, but of course that would sound mean and nasty. Here's an update on the Costner case. In a short hearing April 25th at 2 p.m., Department 23 before Judge Cunningham, the defense for Jim Costner in the case of Costner versus Columbus, as they like to describe it, made several motions seeking for the court to do the following things in preferential order. One, dismiss the case based on the grounds that they are trying to prosecute based on the political nature of the situation, not on the so-called crime of vandalizing or smashing the Columbus statue. Two, release all the, quote, evidence, including the overpriced value, quote, the damage estimates, and the Jim's confession, so that the defense will be able at least to know what they're being charged with and what evidence is being presented against them. Three, have a bail reduction hearing to at least lower the bail back to the original amount. And all these motions were requested by the DA to be submitted in writing. Push back the case 3 weeks to May 16th, 1:30 p.m., Department 23. And that's going to be in San Jose County Court. We have a caller calling in.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I'm coming in 5 minutes.
This sounds like the, I'm not going to say who this is.
Yes.
The voice of
infamous old lady Scar Arms. I will be taking control. You better batten down the hatches, boy, or get out.
Thank you, Lady Scar Arms, or old, if you will, Lady Scar Arms.
Well, I guess that, that's that for Bathrob Spears Broadsides. What we're going to be doing now is going out on a little of that Carol Denny music that some of us love so well. I'll be at the town clock at 2 o'clock with Steve Argue to chat, and if you're interested in doing some organizing for the next sleeping band protest, come on down there at 2, or perhaps join me on Tuesday to watch a movie, have some pizza, and figure out what about a tent city in Santa Cruz, or what about the links between the sleeping band and other issues. That's happening Tuesday night, 7:30 to 10, Loudon Nelson Center. Other events coming up today, 4 o'clock, Green Party Homeless Working Group, 132 Matson Street. If you haven't got a ride, come to the town clock at 2. We'll talk about it. And tomorrow morning, the Monday morning group at the Coral Street dining room area for the Homeless Services Center, 8 o'clock in the morning. Everybody welcome, of course, except you know who. Thanks for being with us on this edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. It's... almost
time. I told you 5 minutes.
She's here earlier. She's here.
I told you 5 minutes.
Oh, this is good. I'll talk to you later.
Well, Americans are very friendly people, as countries right next door will recommend. We never mess with other countries' business, but if we do, we hope we'll still be friends. We care about the way you run your country, and we'd like to be supportive if we can. If someone's running out of ammunition, we're proud to be the first to lend a hand. Yeah, let's just have the next war at the White House, so our president won't have so far to go. Let's have it in our own backyard the next time. Yeah, we'll host the show and bring the party home. Well, war is hell, we know, but still we love it. But it's all so far away. Let's cook at home next time instead of cater, in honor of the good old CIA. Yeah, let's just have the next war at the White House, so our president can really see the show. We won't have to wait and see if they invite us. No, we'll just roll the White House rocks and throw our own. You know, for some of us, host the show and bring the party home.
You'll be pleased to know that I have removed the offensive Robert Norse out of the station, actually just next door into the bathroom, and I've confined him in there. It's a very small space, but no, Robert, you're going to be in there for the next 5 hours. You talked too much, and this is your pay, your punishment.
About 9:30 on May 11th, Friday night. Here, New Leaf is closed, but the music is playing, and there's some folks hacky-sacking by the closed Alibaba Cafe, but you're telling me that there's some interference with hacky-sacking that's become a forbidden sport?
Yeah, there's a few cops around here that come around and tell us that we can't hacky-sack because we get in the way of traffic or whatever. But actually, we talk to a lot of people around here. They think it's pretty cool that we hack because hacking is a sport and it is an art. And there's a lot of people that like to do it, man. And it's just our right to have fun right here because that's what they built this place for, not just to suck up our money.
Very good. What's your name?
James.
And James, hi. What... anything? You say police came by yesterday and told people they couldn't hack you, say?
Tonight, too.
What happened?
No, I don't know. They just were kind of prickish about it. They stopped by and said, you know, you guys can't hack here anymore because it's interfering with traffic or people walking by.
How long ago was this?
A couple hours ago.
And how many people were hacking?
Oh, there was a group. Well, no, there were probably about five or six.
Were they blocking the sidewalk?
No, we were over there by the closed Alibaba Cafe. We even asked Alibaba if he minds us hacking over there when he's closed, and he said not at all. Because
for him.
We're out of the way of the people.
And how many police officers were concerned about this?
There's only a couple right now, but I know it's going to become an issue because they're going to try to drive all these people away from here. But you can't do that. You can't drive people off from the land which they live.
There's actually, people, looks like about 10, 20, 30, maybe 35 people here. A group is singing nicely off to the side here, a little bit of dancing. Are these particular officers, like is one an African-American officer, Officer Perry, also known as RoboCop, or?
No, well, he's pretty cool about it as long as we're out of the way of the people. Yeah. It's mainly the guys that come around in the evening, the rookies. They like to cause a lot of trouble around here just because they're trying to show their bosses what's up, you know?
I would hope their bosses would advise them that this is a avenue for everybody, not just for tourists and attorneys returning from the movies.
Exactly. Listen to these people out here. They're playing a guitar. That's a form of expression right there. They're expressing their beliefs and their rights through their feelings and songs.
Dig it. Anything else happened today that you want to talk about?
Not really. It's been pretty cool out here. I mean, besides that factor, people doesn't stop people from hanging out here, man. We don't, you know, we're not going to give in to their Nazi crap.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, it's about 20 to 4 on the streets of Berkeley, Telegraph Avenue, on what, May 13th, I think it is, Mommy's 14th, Day.
14th. 13th?
It's the 13th. I think it's the 13th. So, what is your name, madam?
My name's Ariel Goodman.
And you are?
John Cummings.
And John, the man who doesn't know what he's talking about in some matters, but in Santa Cruz matters, he has strong perceptive insight. What were you saying a moment ago there?
I was saying that you are the man who goes to all city council meetings and keeps them in order. Talks shit, makes them understand reality. Thank you.
This has not been a paid commercial announcement. Now, what's happening here on the streets of Berkeley? Anything exciting, folks?
Presently, we're trying to sell our glass pipes here so we can get money to live.
How's it going?
Not so good, actually. A lot of people already have glass.
Any harassment by local police, merchants, etc.?
Oh, no, we don't have that problem.
Okay.
Quite yet.
How long have you been out here wending your wares?
Only half an hour or so.
Well, I'll call those police officers over and see if we can get a little action here.
Okay,
I'm sure if we were in Santa Cruz for half an hour, we would have a problem already, though.
Possibly, that's true. How about sleeping? Are you guys sleeping outside?
No, we're not homeless.
No, we do have a home.
Okay.
Respect.
Fair enough. Thank you both. We're talking to Russell Bates, who's the sticker man of Berkeley, or one of them. Russell, you're here on a sunny Sunday afternoon, but you're facing some sort of court hearing coming up, or someone is?
Yeah, there were 32 of us that were arrested at Wheeler Hall on the UC Berkeley campus last month protesting conditions for the people of Palestine under their relentless attack from Israel. And we have a court date coming up, 2 p.m. May 23rd, Superior Court in Berkeley on Martin Luther King and Center Street, where we're going to be arraigned. Most of us have been charged with obstructing a doorway. Some people were charged with obstructing and resisting arrest. And I was, again, because I'm pretty well known as an activist in Berkeley, I was accidentally kneed in the nose by a UC Berkeley cop.
The name of which was?
Officer Teal. Officer Teal.
I've heard that name somewhere before, but maybe not.
Yeah, Teal was the one that, during the People's Park in 91, smashed Eli on the head, accused him of trying to take his baton out of his baton holder, and sent Eli to the hospital with a concussion, and Eli won a good settlement from that.
But Teal is still on the force.
Teal is still on the force. He's on the UC bomb squad. I don't know if he's on their SWAT team or not, but he's a well-known pig.
To say the least. Okay, Russell, how can people, is there a phone number people can call if they want more information on this issue?
There is a website, Students for Justice in Palestine. Let me see. That's the organization. The website is justiceinpalestine.org.
Sehr gut.
Thank you, sir. Anything you want to add?
Fuck the police.
I don't see that sticker here.
That sticker ran its course. Right now I'm concentrating on the four stickers. I have divest from Israel, Israel out of Palestine, free Palestine, and stop U.S. aid to Israel.
Thank you.
Very welcome.
Okay, we're in the club med with Julia Vinograd, the notorious poet. How are you doing, Julia?
I'm doing fine.
You have a new poem here, which you're threatening to read me, which I've asked you to do. Go ahead.
Okay, some friends of mine just got married. It's called Wedding Party. I went to a wedding in a park recently, and all our friends were there, even the dead ones. Before the wedding, they played a tape of the big, laughing, dead drummer whomping his pair of waist-high Congo drums like spanking the bottoms of baby gods that had been so bad. A dead biker's painting scowled ferociously at the long circle ceremony under the noonday sun, trying to convince everyone where he was hotter. Hell is a status symbol. But he always was a liar. Another guy came in a jar of ashes carried by his girlfriend. No way was he going to miss this wedding. The bride wore black silk trimmed with maroon lace, so low-cut her breasts shone like headlights. But there were three other brides wandering around, at least one female. A magnificent 7-foot-tall bridal drag queen in foot-and-a-half platform shoes wrapped in a white satin sheet slit all the way up, strode sure-footed as a ghostly lighthouse. I could hear my ghost friend sailing back across the river Styx, sighting her full-length white veil on train and yelling, "Beer ahead!" Our friends were all the same age they were when they died, but we'd gotten older, a little less real, whooping second-hand shouts. There were stacked tables of steaming, grabbable chicken, coleslaw turning a little in the sun, many bottles of wine fighting a corkscrew with arthritis, and a maypole as well as the wedding with the same colored ribbons from the bridal altar. The untied shoelaces of time danced to high, sweaty, stumbling confusion. It was a good party. Everyone was there, even the living.
Whoa.
Did you hear any of that?
I did. I heard
your machine hear any of that? The med started going to town on noise.
The med is definitely a noisy place to do this, but you have a way of cutting through the noise in more ways than one.
Well, that's very nice. I hope your listeners can hear it, too.
Thank you, Julia.
Okay. Hi out there, everybody.
Here on Telegraph Avenue wearing my Hate Your Job, Quit t-shirt. I'm talking to a man who has a t-shirt that says God was my co-pilot, but of course we crashed in the mountains and I had to eat him. Your name, sir?
Carl.
And Carl, here you are lounging about with a bunch of ne'er-do-wells in front of the med.
I think the ne'er-do-well is in a supposition on your part.
Don't use those big words. I'm kind of a slow learner.
I doubt that.
Now, you say that you actually did hate your job and quit.
Yes, I did.
How long ago was this?
About 15 years.
And what kind of work were you doing?
I used to be a service manager / shop foreman for Volkswagen dealers.
Volkswagen's a people's car?
Das people's car.
Ah, well, the Führer had very many good ideas.
You like this car?
I like it very much.
It was perfect when we left the factory.
Very perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
So what made you decide to quit the job? Just personal discomfort, or you didn't like the car?
They always expected that when they hired me, that they hired my morality. And they wanted me to lie to their customers for them.
About?
All repairs, generally, or what was covered under a warranty situation, or how to go about pressuring the factory to extend a warranty. And they also wanted me to conspire with them to mistreat and underpay their employees, neither of which was I ever willing to do.
How long did you suffer in silence?
Never.
How long did you suffer while grumbling?
About 20 years.
And what finally made up your mind?
Well, after trying approximately 17 dealers, I decided that I was deluding myself to think that I would ever find one that was not like that. That most of them were owned and operated by ex-car salesmen who are about that much above prison guard.
Which is saying...
half an inch.
Yeah. Thank you. Now, did you have visions of being penniless on the streets, no place to live, nobody would like you, your mom would say, what happened to my son, that sort of thing?
They never liked me.
I see. So you were there already.
Yes.
Were you, in fact, able to find work that you enjoyed doing and were able to...
I didn't want to find work.
So did you find a way of living that enabled you to...
The parents that I have.
Well, this could be a fantasy I'm having here.
It seems unlikely, doesn't it? It must be a mass fantasy if it is. There are other people having it at the same moment.
How are you making ends meet? What's your secret?
I'd really rather not say.
Oh, you see, here we go, man. He hated his job, he quit, but he won't tell us what happened next. Well,
everybody might try to do it if I told you. There you might find out, and, you know...
It would all be over.
Yeah, so I might have to get a real job. And that's St. Paul right there, and he's rather famous on the avenue, whereas I'm just, you know...
You're just one of the...
I'm just part of the paint.
Well, thank you for the update.
Okay, thank you for interviewing me. I appreciate any attention I can get that isn't violent or...
Unhealthy?
Unhealthy.
Thank you. Okay, it's around 6:15. We're on the scene in front of Cody's Gagne with a Spoon Books, talking to Duncan, or Bruce Duncan, as he hates to be called. How are you doing, Duncan?
I'm all right, except to use my first name.
Yeah, I tend to do that. I have to antagonize everyone, or I don't feel I'm quite right.
Well, as the independent spirit you are, you're bound to, express yourself certain ways, and...
True enough.
Part of town where many people love to express their personal ways.
Right, you. And your expression involves the sale of Hank and Hannah comics, buttock blasting, Telegraph Street calendars, of course, the ever-present Julia Vinaigrette's poetry book, her latest one being Blues for All of Us.
Don't forget Cliff Mason's posthumous collection of many of his drawings over a period of 10 years.
There you are. Plus, of course, the ever popular Destination Masturbation, for those of us who are handy with our hands, and those of us who aren't as well. What's been happening on Telegraph? It's a sunny Sunday afternoon that's kind of winding down. I see some people are putting away their stuff. Anything happened today of note?
Well, the funny thing is yesterday was exciting. Saturday yesterday was very exciting for me. It's like everything seemed in fast motion. Today the tone is so different. Actually, in a way, it's been kind of wound down all day. I'm not sure I can explain it.
No exciting instances of police harassment or brutality?
No. I did see Sergeant Boga, but I didn't see him doing anything with anybody.
Now, what about this latest Berkeley City Council's watered down, let them sleep resolution, supposedly with an impact on the homeless to make enforcement of 647J the lowest priority, but in fact not affecting all the other anti-homeless trespass laws and the university trespass laws and police harassment for sleeping that goes on? Are homeless people now less vulnerable to police because of that lowest priority? I could require two complaints and a warning, or two warnings and a complaint, or something like that?
Well, certain homeless people I know have said they don't consider it a real victory, that it's kind of a sneaky thing. And another thing is, even if they, because of public protest, say, strike down an ordinance, well, there's always this deal that happens over and over again where when people aren't paying attention, they shove it in anyway, back again.
So have you heard of any, what the results of this have been? Is there a reduction in the harassment of homeless sleepers, an increase? Or have you heard nothing?
I haven't heard anything. I don't know. It's conceivable there's less for the time being.
Right. Well, I haven't heard anything either. Of course, I just arrived in Berkeley, and I haven't gotten the update from people on the streets. You yourself probably are more in touch. If you find out, and I would encourage you to ask, is it working? Are the police harassing less, or are they using other ordinances? Please let me know.
Okay, you bet. Don't forget, folks, those of you with paychecks, some of you only live one paycheck to the next. You could be the next to hit the street. It's just possible, or if not the very next, it could happen.
Indeed. It's unfortunate that this month there is no new Street Spirit Out because of the medical emergency in the street spirit offices.
It could happen that some people who are respectable, hardworking, breadwinner-type folks become homeless street scum overnight. It does happen.
Oh, try not to scare the horses, will you please, there, Duncan? Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're really welcome, Robert, and I wish you the best in your good work.
Thank you.